Are you excited to get up in the morning and tear into another day? Or do you dread going to work? If you've ever wondered, is that all there is? The Career Clinic is your answer. During this program, you're going to be informed. You're going to be inspired. And you're going to have fun while it happens. We'll help you find work you love and live without regret. Now, here's your host for the Career Clinic, Maureen Anderson.
The most important person you will ever talk with is yourself. How you talk with yourself is something we talk to you all about. We talk with you all the time about on the Career Clinic. There has to be a better way to phrase that, right, Daryl?
Yeah, maybe, but well, you're into it already, so there's no going back.
Daryl Anderson, my husband and producer. Sometimes I don't know what I would do without you to catch me when I just, you know, jump off a cliff right at the beginning of a program. Anyway, if you're like me, the mean things people say, no matter how small the percentage of inputs they represent, play in your head constantly. And I want to see if we can figure out a way to stop that in this hour of the Career Clinic. We'll title the episode of the show the same as the title of the book by my guest. Her name is Jude Bijou, and the book is Attitude Reconstruction, a blueprint for building a better life. Very nice to have you with us, Jude.
Thanks, Maureen. It's my pleasure to be here.
Are some of us genetically predisposed to being more wounded by life than others?
Absolutely. It can be that we each have a constitution that is made up, an emotional constitution. Some people are going to have a lot of sadness, and they're the ones that are going to get more wounded. And then others of us have more anger, and we're going to react from anger. And then a third group of people are more fearful, and they're going to have a scared reaction.
Is that something we are born with, or does it develop in the first few years of life, or does it develop over time?
Well, we're really born with it, and then, because if you think of children, if you have three children, they can all be very different, have very different personalities. And so if I have a lot of fear, if I'm born with a lot of fear, then I have a tendency to see the world through that lens of fear. And so as I grow up, I might get and develop more habits that are fear-based.
Is it something that a woman or a man, for that matter, has any control of in the 9 months the child is gestating?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If we have a constitution that is, say, basically fear-based, there are some things that we can do to keep ourselves pacified. It's not a good time to be running around scrambling if that's what our natural tendency is. Nice time to be more relaxed, or not to have the kind of foods that are going to agitate us, or to go to like horror movies. And those kind of things are only going to be accentuating the environment that we're putting our newborn in.
There's a book called The Secret Life of the Unborn Child. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but I read it decades before I knew I was going to be a mother, and it made such an impression on me. For example, a mother who smokes, if I remember what was in the book correctly, they could track the anxiety of the child when the mother was even thinking of having another cigarette.
Wow, I wouldn't be a bit surprised, but I think it's that subtle. The baby and the mother are so inextricably linked.
So all of your emotions are playing out in this infant. It's a very good time to get in touch with those emotions, is what you're saying.
Yes. Get in touch with the emotions. And also, I go back to, what do children do? When they have sadness or anger or fear, what do? They express those emotions physically. When the baby is sad, they will cry, they'll wail, they're letting you have that message that something's not okay. And then they get over it. You figure out what they need, and it passes. And then they're back to their bubbly self. And so it's the same with anger. They'll have that temper tantrum, and then they're back to their doing whatever the activity that they were doing, or they shift activities.
So it's a very healthy way to be in the world. You just let it out, and then you get over it, and you move on. But at some point, and I think it starts very early, we learn that it's not okay to feel what we're feeling.
Absolutely. We get those messages boys aren't, you know, boys shouldn't cry, and girls don't look pretty if they get angry, and don't be a scaredy cat. We have so many messages that stop us from doing what we naturally were born to do. And so we need to really give ourselves permission. But, of course, that doesn't mean that right in the middle of the office we're going to wail and pound and scream. But we need to find a safe place and find a very constructive way to move that energy, because emotions are just energy in the body. And if we move that pure energy out, then we're back into the present. We're back being our true centered self.
I want to linger on this for just a moment, though, because I think a lot of people listening probably grew up with at least one parent who was of the I'll give you something to cry about mentality. And it's because that's how that parent was raised, that you're just supposed to not feel certain things, that it's not okay to be upset with somebody you love, or it's not okay to be this upset about that thing. And the thing that I've always found fascinating about that is that the minute someone tells me that my emotion is out of proportion to the event, it just makes me more emotional. I've got something else to be bummed out about.
And that's a little angry, right? You're a little bit angry, as well as maybe you're a little bit sadder. You don't feel understood. But we also can even feel, we put some another layer of feeling angry about it because somebody is telling me I shouldn't do what I naturally feel.
Mm-hmm. But you're right. It's kind of a tightrope act as you grow older, because if everybody was throwing tantrums because things weren't going well at the office, you know, it would be mayhem. So you have to temper the, it's okay to feel what you're feeling, with the find a good place to express that. Can we talk about what some of those places are once you're a grown-up?
Absolutely. Well, when we're in the office, you can always take a minute and say, oh, I've got to go to the bathroom. The bathroom's a really wonderful, safe place. Right? And you can take the door of the stall and shake it on its hinges back and forth for just a minute. It's not loud. And you make some sounds. And you'll feel, you know, 30 seconds of that disperses that anger. And then you can go back out to whatever you were working on. Okay, where was I? What was I going to do? Rather than trying to work through that, we can deal with the emotion and then be able to be present to what needs to be done. So we can have a little cry when we feel sad, if we got hurt or whatever. Go to the bathroom, have a little bit of cry. Or for the fear, and we can maybe talk about this, is move that energy out of the body. So we can go to the bathroom. We can go, like, outside of our building, maybe around in a little private place. Or the car, a great place. Not while you're driving, usually, but to move, you know, it's safe. You roll up the windows, and maybe you want to get some of that anger out, and you just, you know, take that steering wheel, and and it just moves the energy. It sounds so silly, but it really works.
Well, not to argue with some of your tips, but I would be afraid to be shaking the door of the stall, because I would be sure that somebody would walk in right at that moment.
Well, if you can't do that, then maybe you walk outside or go into a storage room or something, and you can stomp. Like I said, we're just taking that anger energy is hot, and we want to move that aggressive anger out. So we have to find a way that we can do that safely and constructively.
Just say the boss told you to go in and test the hinges on the door. That'll do it.
But the hinges can take it, and it's not really noisy at all. You just grab the sides of it and just shake it. It doesn't really make any noise at all. But to just take that minute to just move that energy, it opens everything back up.
Sounds like you've done it.
Absolutely. Have over you? And over.
Have you?
Absolutely, and I have a, I'm a psychotherapist, and so when clients come in, I'll put out big stacks of phone book, because they go, oh, Jude, I really need to get my anger out. And they'll just wail away, and pages will fly and make such a loud noise. that a few minutes of that just goes, oh, okay, all right, now we can get to whatever these issues that I wanted to deal with.
Well, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, we just take note of what our children do. They go down, kick and scream. We've got to find a safe place. It could be at home. It could be in the garage. It could be in the back bedroom, the bathroom. We need to find a way that works for us and then try it out.
This reminds me of what the businessman and this best-selling author Harvey McKay said about running. You'll never feel worse for having gone for a run. And I think that's how a lot of us use running. It's a great outlet, and there are so many benefits, but not the least of which is it's a place to put your anger.
Well, though, I think it's better than nothing, but you never hear a child say, I'm so angry, I'm going to go exercise.
Well, they call it playing, you know. They'll tear around the gym or the jungle gym.
Well, yes, but not when they're angry. When they're angry, they want to destroy something.
Okay.
They might throw something. It's wild, that anger. That's why we need a safe place where we can just let go. We just don't have permission. And that's what, you know, again, like you were saying before, we learn that from our parents who learned it from their parents. And there's no room in the household for anger, or crying is not going to be tolerated. So we've learned those old messages. But if we see what's really natural, we can do that. And then you just experience the benefits. It sounds weird, but it really works.
You're listening to Jude Bijou. She is the author of Attitude Reconstruction, A Blueprint for Building a Better Life. When we come back, 33 bad attitudes and what you can do with them. There's more to come on the Career Clinic.
Don't be surprised if the information you hear on the Career Clinic helps you find the best job you've ever had. After all, that's why we're here.
When someone offers you a free consultation, it's reasonable for you to wonder if there's a catch. If you've ever explored the idea of owning a franchise business, then you probably know about franchise brokers. They offer free consulting to guide you through the process of deciding whether to invest or not invest in a franchise. Jerry Polio is with Franchise Futures in Houston, Texas.
You know, we're compensated quite well. Our fees are paid by the franchise community. So some will say, you know, we'll try to push you in a direction of franchisor A or franchisor B because they pay more. Well, I've put people in franchises where the franchise fees for us as a franchise broker are very low. But at the end of the day, they're still in business and they're very, very happy. And I think that's really what's important.
Polio says he takes on consulting jobs even though there's no guarantee he'll get paid.
So at the end, they may not buy a franchise because they decide that maybe this is not the right avenue for them. So that's a good thing because then, you know, I was able to help them and hopefully save them aggravation time and money and resources and so forth. So my goal is to keep it simple, take it very, very personally, give back to them and give them all of my knowledge. And the bottom line, I want to help. And if I can help, I will. And if I can't, I will certainly be able to point them in the right direction. Because sometimes business ownership, and specifically franchising, is not for everyone, and it shouldn't be.
Polio says using a consultant or broker to arrange a franchise deal won't cost you anything on the back end either. So the consulting part really is free.
Hiring someone like ourselves or getting engaged with me or someone else that lives and breathes franchising, I think it's a smart way to go.
To find out more, just visit thecareerclinic.com, where you'll see a link at the top of the homepage that asks if you'd like to start your own business. Again, that's thecareerclinic.com.
"33 Bad Attitudes and What You Can Do With Them." That's an ebook on sale for $2.99 at attitudereconstruction.com. And the author, Jude Bijou, is my guest on the Career Clinic today. I'm Maureen Anderson. Jude, this is a short segment, but let me guess. A bad attitude can be a good thing if you know how to harness it.
That's right. First, if you can identify it, then you figure out, all right, what would I rather do instead?
Okay, so let's take some of the more common ones by way of teasing the book a little bit and helping people learn something.
Great. Well, like, here's an example of a core bad attitude, and that is that we're not in the present. And what happens is maybe what we feel is we feel worried or we feel anxious. And in our mind, what we're thinking is, well, what if this is going to happen? And what if this has happened? And our actions might be maybe we're biting our fingernails or we're not sleeping very well at night. So the attitude is the pure belief. And it's like, how are we going to change that belief? And really, it's to do the opposite. So say you're critical. Okay, you've got a sarcastic, ugly thing to say about almost everything. Well, what's the opposite of being critical?
Accepting.
Yes, keeping your mouth shut, right? Or saying something kind. So here I know, and I'm gonna ready to make that little snide comment. Well, gosh, you know, your socks don't match, or whatever. I either get to say nothing, or I go, boy, I really like how well-dressed you are today. Say, you have to say something honest. But, you know, or, gee, did you get a new haircut? Or I really like that. But so we're really shifting from that old attitude that that really isn't bringing us a good feeling. It's bringing us really more sadness and more anger. And it's not bringing us closeness.
It's particularly obvious how few people are engaged in what's going on right now, judging by how many are fixated on that screen in their hands.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, I think that's true.
I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, staying connected and keeping up, but when it's at the expense of the person who's trying to talk with you face to face.
Yes. Then the connection is not there. You're wanting to make some communication and create some feeling and have some understanding. And if somebody's distracted, that doesn't honor you.
Let's take another bad attitude. Boredom, is that one?
Uh-huh. Boredom means, again, because all of our bad attitudes have underneath them these unexpressed emotions, the sadness, anger, and fear. And so I would say, okay, all right, bored. I say I'm bored, but what's really going on? I don't want to do things, and all these things happen, and I feel little, and I can't do anything about it. So rather than, going, all right, well, what's on it for today, and what would I like to do? We have a tendency to just say, oh, I don't want to do it. Nothing interests me. So we've got to contradict that, because the reality is, what is, again, this is one small little step that you can do, one little thing that you can do that interests you, even if it only half interests you, to take a little step of doing the opposite of succumbing to the television or the computer screen. What's one little thing that I want to do? Let me do that today. Let me just try that. And that will kickstart some of those other kind of feelings.
At the risk of revealing just how old Daryl and I are, I don't think we have a problem with boredom so much, because we didn't grow up in an age where our parents felt like they had to schedule every minute. And that's a life skill, to be able to find magic wherever you are, even in your own head while you're waiting in line.
Nice. Nice. I think that is the case, that we have been so overstimulated at a young age that we don't know how to entertain ourselves. We don't know how we can change our attitude. Because if we, instead of doing all of those things, if you go, well, what am I really feeling right now? All right, well, can I say something different than those old tapes that I'm running around in my house? Why don't I think of something nice to say about myself rather than, nobody likes me, and I'm not getting anything done. What's something I can say? Because we can fill in the moments, those boredom moments or those moments of pause. We don't have to find something else that we want to do with it. We can take that minute. What do I need to do?
Jude Bijou, the author of Attitude Reconstruction, she'll help you stop procrastinating when we come back with the Career Clinic.
Military veterans have some unique opportunities to get into business for themselves. The franchising industry offers special incentives to vets, according to Carlos Gutierrez, head of the Veterans Business Outreach Center in Edinburgh, Texas.
A lot of times, veterans have a certain idea about franchising, but there's over 3,000 franchise opportunities out there, so it's good to have a guide as you look at which ones might be the best options for you. And usually that's going to be a function of what type of experiences you've had in the past, because franchisors like to make sure that you have domain experience in whatever their specialty is. So in a lot of ways, it's a function of making sure that you get into the right fit from your domain experience background and weeding out the ones that you might not necessarily even qualify for. So that's something to keep in mind.
To learn more, visit thecareerclinic.com for the link that asks if you want to start your own business.
I'm on sort of a never-ending self-improvement quest, and I hope you are too, because by improvement, I mean learning what works, what really makes you happy, and doing more of that. That's one reason I jumped at the chance to interview an expert on attitude reconstruction and the author of a book by that name. Her name is Jude Bijou, and Jude, I want to talk about the real reason people procrastinate, which you say you know, but first I want to tell you about a little life hack I stumbled on that's worked magic for me. I'll just kind of walk you through the beginning of my day. I get up and I try to carve out at least 15 minutes where the only thing I'm worried about is my coffee and really nothing else. I just drink coffee and I don't even think if I can avoid it. Then as soon as I can get the beds made and everybody's breakfast served, I write, because that's when, corny as this is going to sound, that's when the muse hits, and whatever I feel inspired to write, it'll take me like 1/10 the time if I just sit down and do it right away. Then for the rest of the day, I do things in order of what I most dread. So for example, next I will work out with weights because it's boring and it's hard and I hate it and I always will. And that's a bad attitude and I don't care. The next thing I do is like paperwork or housework that I just, you know, I hate, but not quite as much as doing the weights. Then we go running because that's next on the list. And then after that, the day gets easier. But I've done the things that are most important, you know, the working out, the writing, and it'll just get easier as the day goes on. So that's how I try to keep procrastination at bay. What do you think?
I think it works well for you.
Yeah.
It sounds like it does. What I really have found is that when we're really procrastinating, there's some, again, it goes back, there's some emotion underneath that that keeps us from moving forward with what we need to do. And that if we just take a minute or two to move the emotions, see, like you do it with some coffee and so on. And I'd say that's good, that's relaxing, and, you know, it's that you time. But I'd say if we just take a minute or two and move some energy out of our body, like a lot of procrastination is based in fear, it's scary. There's stuff we don't, it seems too big, it seems, you know, too much, you know, those projects. That if we'll deal with the emotion first, then, and I would say here, because it's fear, it's shaking and shivering. It's getting up, maybe putting on a minute or two of music, and allowing the body to shake and shiver, like, ooh, making noises up the spine and out the arm and through the legs. If we just give ourselves a minute, then it dissipates that energy. Or if there's something we really don't want to do, again, stomp around for just a minute or so. And then we go, okay, what do I want to do next? What are the calls that I need to make first, or no, I need to work out? But that would be some prep. Some people say, oh, I meditate or whatever. But I say move some energy out of the body and then take that action. It'd be so much easier.
Well, it makes me wonder what else is behind this thing I heard Paul Newman did when he got up in the morning. He put his face in a bowl of ice water. I think I read it as a skincare tip, which seems a little not masculine for Paul Newman, although he had great skin. There's no question. But, you know, I was thinking about him when I just decided to dip a little paper towel in a glass of cold water when I first get up to. And I hold that on my face, and it's amazing how soothing that is. You wouldn't think it would be because it's such a shock to your skin, but it really wakes you up. And is it sort of an energy transfer going on there, do you think?
Oh, well, I think so, too. But I would say that if you, because I've heard that, too, if you envision that sink and him putting his face in that sink, his body is in shock, and he's naturally going to make some, you know, woo, make some huge sound, you know, it's like, right? He's moving that energy. He's activating that energy as well, and that's what's going to give him, one of the reasons it's going to give him that glow in his face is he's no longer has that energy stuck. He can move forward with his day.
Yeah. So you can do it in the shower, take a really hot shower.
Yeah, or if you have a cold shower, they're like, boy, you're really going to want to shiver. I mean, that's what swimmers do. Like, they, you get out of the pool and you shake and shiver in fear. Or before a race, if you're a swimmer, you shake and shiver that energy out.
Well, David Letterman, the producers of his show keep that studio, I've heard, so cold. I mean, they tell you if you're thinking about going to a taping, really bundle up. Because don't they pump cold air in? And that's to keep people, what, awake or what?
Probably a little bit on that fear thing. You know, like, I got to keep active because that's what I'd say. Put me in a cold room and I'm going to want to shake to warm up my body because that's one of the things that happens. Fear cools us down and, you know, makes us more heightened alert. And so I'm going to shake that energy out.
It's really important, I think, to pay attention to the rhythms of the day. Like, your body starts to get chillier at night, right?
Yes.
And what does that mean?
I think that
for your attitude.
Well, that might just be the body rhythm and something that's not necessarily an emotional issue. It could be that there's more fear at night. I'm not really sure about that, but it could just be the rhythm. But it brings me to something because I'm on this little roll here. That if you can't sleep in the middle of the night, rather than counting sheep or having that bowl of cereal or whatever, get out of bed and shake and shiver. It sounds so weird, but if like 2 minutes of good, vigorous shivering, with and you're not thinking about all those things you're worried about, you just woo, just like sounds, woo, because it's just, I'm moving that fear energy out of my body, you will hit the pillow and go back to sleep in less than 2 minutes. It's amazing.
I know somebody can try that. You'll have to report back, Daryl.
I'll let you know.
I just see cynicism written all over your face.
Do you? Is that what you see there? Yeah, well.
Jude Bijou, my guest on the Career Clinic today. Attitude Reconstruction is the title of her book, and it's this edition of the Career Clinic.
Nobody likes a pushy salesperson. If you're like me, you prefer to work with someone who listens to you and finds out what works best for you and not what works best for them. That's why I think you'd like Jerry Polio. He works with people who are interested in franchise business opportunities. He doesn't charge for his services because he gets paid by the company that sells the franchise. But that doesn't mean he plays favorites either. You can look at it this way. If Polio was selling cars, he'd be representing all brands instead of just two or three.
If they call a specific brand, whether it's in a food category or service category, they're only speaking to one brand. So they get a very narrow view, and that narrow view is that that concept will give its best effort to try to bring this person on as a franchise owner. In a consulting environment, we have exposure to so many different options. So if we know that this one is going to shut us down because either we can't get the financing or we don't have the capital or just doesn't seem to be lining up right, then we have the ability to twist and turn. So you really get a wide view of what franchising looks like. And at the end of the day, you may decide that this is not something that you feel comfortable with. And you can certainly walk away from it.
Working with a consultant like Polio gives a franchise candidate a broad perspective of the business.
As you go through the due diligence process of looking at different concepts across different categories, what that will do will give you a confidence that you now understand the industry, you understand the terminology, and you can always make a right turn where you think you're locked into something. You know, we can always step back And we can always review that, and then we can say, okay, what are the positives and what are the negatives? And you can always change your direction, and we can always modify it.
Another advantage of working with a franchise consultant is that he or she can advise you about financing options that you may not have considered. For example, there are a number of incentives available for military veterans, says Polio, and a newer financing option called crowdfunding.
It's a very, very interesting, smaller concept that seems to be trending. So we're just kind of watching it. We wanted to kind of pick up on it and follow it. I have not heard of any specific success rates to date. I think in general, the crowdfunding is something that we're all looking at, you know, as another avenue for financing.
Polio calls franchise ownership a great career option, but one that shouldn't be considered lightly.
So anyone that's really, you know, looking for a life change, a lifestyle change, and a business entity, I think franchising's new landscape is really something that is viable and they should really take a look at and really do that more on an in-depth level than just doing an internet search, because we both know there's a lot out there, but this is a big decision.
You can find out more by visiting thecareerclinic.com, where you'll see a link at the top of the homepage that asks if you'd like to start your own business. Again, that's thecareerclinic.com.
How do you stay upbeat while doing a dreaded task? I have a couple of ideas, but the person I think would better be able to help you with that is my guest on the Career Clinic today. Her name is Jude Bijou, and she's the author of Attitude Reconstruction. She's also a teacher, an award-winning writer, a marriage and family therapist, and as I mentioned, I want to give you the title of that book again, Attitude Reconstruction, a blueprint for building a better life. You can learn more at attitudereconstruction.com. So, Jude, the way I attack projects that I put off and dread and so forth is this way. I break them into such small pieces that any one piece is so easy that even I can't put it off. That's not an original thought. I got it from somebody else. It works really well unless you try to do very much of that at once, because then your whole day is just flitting from one tiny thing to the other and you never quite get anywhere on anything.
You know, I agree 100%, because that's what happens. But, you know, again, as I was saying, procrastination is fear. It's a time. It's a fear kind of thing. And the way to take care of that fear is to break the big amorphous kind of, oh, my gosh, I can never do it, into those little bite-sized pieces. So I just totally agree. It's a series of small, doable pieces. And then it's like, oh, I can do that. So instead of, oh, I have to put together a newsletter, oh, I don't want to do it, I would keep putting it off, rather than, oh, well, let me see what the elements of what I'll need to do. Write them all down. And it just melts all of the anxiety and all of the overwhelm. So I think you're right on.
You can build up momentum. And if you have something that you can break down into small enough pieces that you can do every day, I mean, every single day, then there's a productivity tip attributed to Jerry Seinfeld, which is not breaking the chain. You take a calendar or whatever, but every day he writes like one joke or something, and then he makes a red X on the calendar, and you get going, and you don't want to break that chain.
Nice.
Yeah, isn't
nice.
It?
Do you know what I heard a long time ago is that people say, oh, I can't meditate. Meditate for 2 minutes, right? Sit for 2 minutes. Sit for 3 minutes. You don't have to, I have to be an hour and be, you know, calm. Just break it into that tiny little I can sit and take a few deep breaths. Great. That's all you need to do. And then, like, I love that, to link them together.
What I found helpful when it comes to meditating is not calling it meditating. There's something about that word that just sounds too new agey, even for my taste, and I lean towards the woo-woo. I call
it
zoning. Yeah,
it's
zoning.
Yeah.
Whatever. Something else I found helpful with, for example, the laundry, which, you know, comes around every week. It's boring. It's never going to be less boring. But two things help me. One is I remember how lucky I am to have people to do laundry for. I mean, not that they couldn't do their own, but
Aww. Yeah.
And two, it's a break from the freaking screens. I mean, I realize that I'm more productive at my work when I'm doing the laundry than when I'm supposedly working, because my brain is out to play. I don't need it to do the laundry, so it goes and does whatever it finds the most fun, which interestingly happens to be solving whatever problem I'm trying to solve in front of the screens. So I resent it much less now.
Yes, but you are doing your homework, because that's really good, is to go and use different kind of faculties, different tools that we have. I don't have to just be all in my mind trying to solve the problem. I can take a break, and you're like remembering, well, I'm doing this for my family. That feels good. I'm doing this because it's great to see that stack and to know that I'll have a nice stack of T-shirts to offer my husband. All those kind of things help you keep the reality rather than, oh, the laundry, oh, da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, it's the more you can, like making the beds, the more you can do it for the thing itself. You approach it as a work of art every time. I mean, the chef who does that little swirly thing with the dessert, I bet that gives him delight every single time he does it. He might do it 50 times in an evening.
Lovely, because it's very present. See, again, fear takes us out of the present. We're in the future. We're trying to solve the problems. But into the present is where the action is. And you take pleasure in making that bed, in adding that swirl, in listening to somebody.
I'm going to admit something so corny, but when I was trying to make running a habit, I mean, something that I was just not obsessed about, but so conscientious that I didn't ever skip workouts. I just wanted that off my list. I just wanted to be the kind of person who got her workouts in every week, and that was the end of it. Well, when I was in the mode of building up to that, I used to imagine that on the bleachers on the high school track where we ran, that all these people were cheering for me, that I was out there doing it. But if we could all approach our lives like each day is this work of art that you're offering up to the gods, and that somebody's watching and cheering you on, it just makes you feel like there's a little bit more of a point to it, or it does me.
You know, that's just right on, because I would say not only all those people are cheering you on, but that's what you need to be doing while you're running as well, or whatever. It's like praising yourself for each little, you know, I took that next step. Good for me. It's like, I'm going to make it around this lap. Good for me. That we can be our own cheerleader as well as envisioning it from the outside.
Yes, and think of how much nicer you'll be to everybody else if you've been nice to yourself.
Absolutely, because we just have, and this goes back to all the sadness that we have accumulated, is that we've turned it against ourselves, and we're beating ourselves up mercilessly about what we didn't do and how we're not enough of this and that. And so it really is a thing of, I've got to stop. You know, it's like, hey, hold everything. Stop. What's a good thing? There's got to be something good. Oh, no, there's nothing. There's got to be something good. And it's developing those little habits, one of self-appreciation a day.
Well, maybe when you're out and about this weekend at the grocery store or whatever, look around and ask yourself, how many people am I encountering who really seem engaged with their life? And when we come back in the final few minutes with Jude Bijou, we are going to talk about how to stay interested in your own life and your own career. So stick around for that on the Career Clinic. Does it seem as if it's more difficult to motivate yourself as you get older? Why is that, and what can you do about it? Jude Bijou is the author of Attitude Reconstruction, a blueprint for building a better life. Jude, you're up.
Okay, I'm here.
Why do so many of us just kind of give up on ourselves when we get older?
Well, you know, I have to go back to the theme about that we have all of these emotions, the sadness, anger, and fear that's keeping us from being our best. And that if we're feeling those ways, it's like, well, what emotion, and, you know, identify what emotion that is. And it's like, how can I move that? Am I going to try just like shaking and shivering, or have that good cry, and while I'm crying, tell myself nice things about myself. If we can move that emotional body, we'll get unstuck. And then we can get more interested. We'll have more attention, like that little child, to be out there and go, oh, well, you know, I could call my friend. Oh, I could go and go walking in a little different area. If there's more opening after we get out of what's keeping us stuck.
I could be wrong about this, but I think some people really enjoy being crabby.
Well, you know, I think that they'll certainly tell you that. But I really believe that we all, I mean, this is what my work came from, is that I knew I wasn't happy.
Did you?
And I wanted to be happy. And that's what the book is really has done, is real practical ways to do that. But I don't think that that crabby person is really very happy.
Did you have a moment where you thought, okay, this is the turning point? I mean, did you hit bottom, or was it a gradual thing, or what?
You know, I sort of grew up not feeling happy, and it was like I was on a mission to feel like I knew that I should be able to feel.
Mm.
And so everything that I did was to try to put things together to make it make sense, because it didn't. The world didn't make sense to me.
What do you love most about your work?
Is that it works. It's so simple. It's so natural. It's not. It's nothing that doesn't intuitively make a lot of sense. So it helps people. I mean, the answers are really there. And what I find is that people will say, oh, you're a mind reader. No, it's we're all thinking the same kind of destructive thoughts, and that we can do something about it. It's not just you and you're alone. There are answers. And I love to be able to help people see those answers and make those changes.
Can two people be married when one is skewing way towards the unhappy and the other is not?
Absolutely, because you have to take care of yourself first and, you know, make your own inner happiness. And then you need to check with your intuition. And the intuition, it's like, do I need to stay in this marriage? Or does my heart tell me I really need to go? But it could be I'm not going to get the kudos from my spouse, but I can get it from different friends and mostly from myself.
And the best way to inspire anybody else is to set a good example.
Exactly, exactly. Rather than taking the bait when your partner says those kind of comments and trying to say something back, or just ignore, you know, let it go by. You know, again, if we don't engage, then we've sort of broken the cycle. It's when we say, oh, don't do that, and you don't like me. Then we've done just what they want, rather than just let it go by.
We're quickly running out of program, but let's say someone is listening to us, and they have a vague sense that their life could be so much more, but they don't know where to start fixing anything. What would your suggestion be?
Well, I would say get a copy of the book, and as you read it, you just need to take, again, one little thing. Is that I'm going to work with my emotions just a little bit and open those emotions that have been so tight? Is I'm going to just do one thing and change one thought that I have? Or am I going to communicate just a little bit differently and stop telling other people about themselves? Or what kind of action? What's a little bit of action that I need to do? Take one step.
Attitude Reconstruction is the book. You'll find that at attitudereconstruction.com. It will be your blueprint for building a better life. Thanks so much, Jude Bijou, for being my guest on the show today. And thank you for listening to this hour of the Career Clinic.
This broadcast is copyrighted by North Shore Productions. To learn more about the show, you're invited to visit thecareerclinic.com. You can read Maureen's blog or pass along suggestions for the program. I'm Cindy Weir. Thanks for listening, and tune in again next week for more great advice and inspiration on the Career Clinic.